been avoiding conflict lately? Are you afraid that if you speak your truth to someone, you might damage the relationship permanently? Is inner conflict eating you up inside? Maybe you're thinking one thing, but doing another, and you just can't seem to get your head and heart to line up. As humans, we all deal with conflict. Join Jennifer McKenna now as she talks to business leaders about the importance of conflict and how we can all move through it with greater grace and ease, ultimately taking our relationships and our lives to the next level by facing conflict courageously.
Welcome to the show, Conflict Rising, everyone. I am here today with a very special guest who owns a business here in Atlanta, Georgia that makes my life better every day. And so I'm excited to share her and what she's doing with all of you. As you know, we talk about conflict here, but really we talk about cultural topics, things that make our culture, are making or breaking our culture in today's world, in the contemporary society. And so as the show is called Conflict Rising, oftentimes we talk about the conflict that is either rising in our culture that we're all having to deal with individually, or conflict that is rising in our homes and our hearts that we need to move through. But it is an odd topic to bring about today in relation to conflict, because we're going to talk about the power of yoga. And I can't think of anything conflicting about such a beautiful practice, but we're going to talk about how there may be some misinformation out there about it, why some people fear it or dislike it, and with the hopes that by the end of the show, we will make everybody a fan and start changing some lives with this beautiful, beautiful tradition. So, Amber Berry, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you. I'm so excited to talk with you.
Good. Well, can you let our audience know your background, why you love yoga so much, how you got into it?
Sure. I found yoga in 1998. I was recovering from a car crash, and my insurance had run out. I was seeing a physical therapist. I had to learn how to walk again. I had broken both my shoulders. I couldn't lift my arms, above shoulder height. And physical therapy had helped a lot. And then my insurance ran out, and I was 26 years old. And I just couldn't imagine not going to physical therapy anymore. And they said, well, why don't you try a yoga class? And it was 1998. And I think there was maybe one yoga studio in Atlanta at the time. But I was having trouble finding a place to do yoga, and they actually had a class at my gym that I had already belonged to. So I started taking classes, and it was my pain just went away. In an hour of moving and breathing and doing this mysterious practice, my pain all but disappeared, and I couldn't believe it. It was the first thing since Percocet that helped me feel better, and I really didn't like to take medication, so I was able to get off medication by using my yoga practice, and I started doing it every day. I started doing videos at home. There was a TV show with Steve Ross that I used to do every morning at 6 a.m., and it became a necessity for me. Like, I just had a hard time functioning because of the chronic pain I was living with if I didn't do it. And over the course of 3 years, it also helped me control migraines that I'd had since I was 5 years old. I had a migraine every day, and I took medication for that. It helped me sleep better. I'd battled depression and anxiety since I was a young child, and I noticed that my moods were more stable, and it just seemed to like fix all the things in my life that I had struggled with for so long. And I really didn't know you could feel that good. Like, I didn't know there were people walking around that actually felt as good as I felt after a yoga class. So that's how I got into it, and it just became a lifelong passion. I've been practicing ever since.
That's amazing. You know, the funny thing about your story is, not that it's funny, because it's really a powerful story, from you moving from pain that's such a chronic issue in our society, and I want to get to that. But I wanted to point out that I was also introduced to yoga in 1998. So we were living parallel experiences at that time. Yes, I was a little older. Well, obviously, I'm a little older than you now, but I was about 28 or 29 at the time that I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. And at that time, nobody knew what that was. So it was very difficult to get a diagnosis, much less a prognosis. And same thing, characterized by chronic pain, chronic fatigue. And when I say fatigue, I mean it was so deep that it lifting a phone to my ear felt like lifting like a 15 to 20 pound weight. And
sure, I totally
the fatigue
that.
Was just, yeah, it was just so deep into the muscles. So it was extremely debilitating, and I was a very ambitious young nonprofit executive at the time, and nothing was going to slow me down. And it was actually my lifestyle that caused the problem to begin with. So I needed a whole overhaul in the way I approached taking care of myself, which is another story. But yoga was the first thing that I did when my doctor said, the only way we can manage this is with pharmaceutical drugs. And I was so young, and I knew it was a chronic condition, and I knew she was saying to me, there is no cure. So I asked her, well, how old will I be? Or how many drugs will I be taking when I'm 60? I'm not even 30 yet, you know, to treat the side effects from these drugs that you're giving me today. And I said, and furthermore, how high will my dosage be by then? Because my body will be, you know, create a tolerance. And she said, you don't want to know the answer to any of those questions. I said, well, then I don't want to take drugs the rest of my life. So I will let you put me on them today, but I will find another way. And I'll tell you, Amber, it was yoga that changed my life and inspired my current methodology on transformation. And I weaned myself off those drugs 18 months later, never to return to them again. So, you know, what I want listeners to take away from both of our stories is we hear all the time in these headlines about opioids and the addiction rates and how debilitating the actual drug treatments for pain has become, much less the pain itself. And so Amber and I are here to share with you all today another way. Right.
And I think the thing that was most amazing to me was like I already had everything inside of me. Like for years and years, I felt like a victim, dependent on medication. And if I ran out of my medication and I was going on a trip, there would be just like this panic attack. Like, what am I going to do if I don't have my painkillers? And that was the most liberating thing to realize that like I could manage my pain naturally. I had everything inside of me. I just had to learn a system. And that's what yoga is it's a system, and it's been around for thousands of years, and everyone can benefit from it. And it looks different. The benefits look different on every person. But I think that was the thing when I started teaching that, because honestly, I'm an introvert and I had never done any public speaking, and it was the last thing I ever thought I would do, but I have a really deep faith, and I really like felt God saying, you have to teach yoga because nobody else is teaching it. And it was 2001. And it was like, if no one else is going to speak up, you have to. And I couldn't deny that voice. And what I learned when I first started teaching was I wasn't the only one. And so I think when you have chronic pain, sometimes it feels like everyone's walking around happy and free, and you're suffering, and you have to put on a happy face, and no one could really relate, even if you told them. But what I realized was there were a lot of people in a similar situation to me, people who, after taking my class for a couple months, would come back and say, I got off my medication, and you know, this pain that I always had, it's gone now, and I'm sleeping for the first time in years, and I started seeing myself and other people in a way that I never had before. And that really drove the passion to teach, and still does to this day. It's just seeing people walk in, and sometimes they're grumpy, and sometimes I can tell they're hurting, and knowing it can be different in an hour if we work together.
Absolutely. You know, I just had the situation this morning where, and by the way, for everyone listening, Amber owns a yoga studio here in Atlanta called Westside Yoga, and it's in my neighborhood, and I absolutely love it. And
this morning
I went to one of your flow classes because I was exhausted, and I shouldn't be exhausted in the morning, but I had an incredibly long and rigorous work day yesterday, and went to work out this morning as I usually do, And I just thought spontaneously, I am not going to have a good day if I don't get to yoga. So I spontaneously put it on my calendar this morning and turned my day around. It is remarkable the impact that it has on the body. Well, obviously the mind, body, spirit, but oftentimes if we're not paying attention, we can ignore our body's needs because our mind is trying to control everything. And it just has this miraculous way of getting us back in sync. And when we're back in sync, we're more peaceful, we're more joyful, we are more, I think, energetic. So
right.
Can you and tell us a little bit about your thoughts about what the impact of this is?
Well, that was the original intention of yoga. Yoga's been around for thousands and thousands of years, and there weren't actually even any specific postures related to yoga until the 15th century. So for a really long time, I mean, it was created, some say 2000 BC, some say 5000 BC, no one's really sure. But
wow.
it was more about discovering your true nature and living a virtuous life and the impact that your actions have on the world around you. And so the earliest teachings, if you read the Vedas, if you read the Upanishads, it's talking more about, you know, karma, which is, you know, how our actions influence the outcome of our lives, and dharma, like finding your specific purpose. And so it's only since the 15th century that we've actually incorporated the poses, but the poses are actually a really powerful tool, and I think they get a bad rap because sometimes people will make fun of, you know, power yoga classes because they say it's just aerobics or it's just a workout, and I actually disagree with that. I think it's a really powerful tool for steadying the mind if it's taught right, if it's taught in a slow-paced, thoughtful way, mindful way. It actually is one of the best tools we have for steadying our mind, which is the whole point of yoga, is to get to a place where the mind is thoughtless, colorless is what they say in the Yoga Sutras. We want our mind to be colorless, not affected by anything around us, but just steady and open to hearing God's voice is really what it was in the beginning, or whatever your higher power is. You have to quiet all the chatter to be able to hear a higher power than you.
Yeah.
So I think that it's really important in this day and age. We have more distractions and more responsibilities than ever before. And there's a higher number of things we have to respond to in any given hour of our day. If I think back to what my life was when I first got into yoga and all the time I had to practice, I have a lot less time now because I'm expected to return emails and I'm expected to, check social media. And I'm, there's a higher sense of urgency, I think, than before. And so we need yoga more than ever before to be able to be more discerning about how we use our time.
I think that's absolutely true. And you're touching on so many points that I want to kind of break down and talk more deeply about. The first one you brought up are the different poses and the different types of yoga and how some people have made fun of power yoga, for example. And I want to touch on that. I also want to touch on, listening to God and settling the mind and all of these other beautiful things that you've brought up. But let's start there, because one of the things that I really love about your studio, and I'd like for you to explain this a little bit more to our listeners, is the way you've organized the classes so that when I, as a member, am feeling a certain way, I know that I can go to a certain class that is going to be tailored to where I am. And so just to let the audience know, for example, you have a class called Flow, which allows, you know, more of the yin poses, which I'd like for you to explain as well, and more of the quiet, you know, it's less of the workout, so to speak. But there is a power class, and there's, the burns, you call it burn and strong. And then there's also restore. So if, for example, I was rehabbing a few injuries from the gym, and so restore class was perfect for me at that time, moving into flow and then finally back to burn. And I love your energized class. That's kind of the one, my go-to for whatever, wherever I am. So can you break that down for our audience and kind of explain how you categorize them in such a way and why?
Absolutely. I would love to share that because I had known for a very long time that I was supposed to open a yoga studio. It was also a calling from God, but I had 3 children in 39 months. And so when I first started hearing that voice, like, you're supposed to open a yoga studio, I had 3 toddlers. And it was really difficult to figure out the logistics of that. So I just taught around town. And so by the time I was able to open the studio in 2015, I had been thinking about exactly what I would do. I had the whole business plan in my head. And the idea was to build a better yoga studio because I saw a lot of inefficiencies in some of the studios I went to. I saw a lot of lack of communication, and it just kind of felt like I didn't know what kind of class I was going to get, depending on, you know, which one I went to. There wasn't a lot of consistency, and so one of the things I wanted to do was create a consistency and a common understanding between the teachers and the students of what was being offered when you show up, because I think that makes people feel safe. And that was the words in my head were, you have to create a safe and sacred space. And so to me, consistency breeds a feeling of safety. And so that was the first thing. And then, you know, as I got more advanced in my practice, when I had my babies, I had to practice at home because I just couldn't get out to a studio. And the classes back then, a lot of them were 90 minutes. And so that was like a 2.5 hour proposition with babies and babysitters and all that. And so I just started practicing at home every day. And I got really serious and was able to do some more advanced things. And I found that when I went to yoga studios, I wasn't welcome to do some of the advanced postures that I loved and were so meaningful to me. It was like I had to stay with the teacher. And I also struggled to find a class that fit how I wanted to feel, because if I could go at 9:30, but there was only a beginner's class at 9:30, then I didn't really want to do that. So I wanted to make it more accessible. And so our classes are for all levels. Anybody can come to any class. And I tell my teachers, it's your responsibility to figure out how to teach something that supports the students. It's not their responsibility to figure out how to work with you, like, you know, offer options and offer a variety of choices and let them choose, because that's really what yoga is about, listening to your inner voice and making choices for yourself, being more discerning. And so I set it up that way, and then we named all our classes. We don't have beginner's classes or advanced classes. We have classes based on how they make you feel. And if you're a beginner, then you might want to take the flow classes, where our beginners usually start, and that's 30 minutes vinyasa, 30 minutes yin. Vinyasa is like a power yoga practice, which feels like more of a workout, but with mindfulness emphasized. And then yin is stretching. It's active stretching, where you can also quiet your mind and listen to your breath. And so that's where most people start, as our flow class, if they've never done yoga before, because it's only 30 minutes of the really physically challenging part of it. And then they get the stretch and they really like that. So, but the classes, our least intense is called Restore. And that is like a 10-minute warm up and then probably 40, 45 minutes of restorative poses and things that quiet your mind. And I guess I can tell you about the other formats after we come back from the commercial break.
That's perfect. So everyone stay tuned. We're talking to Amber Berry from Westside Yoga.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Namaste, friends. This is Deva Pramal and Mitten. And we wanted to let you know that we will be in America and Canada this May. We'll be coming with our Wings of Mantra World Tour, coming up the West Coast to Boulder, Santa Fe, Sedona, Scottsdale, Santa Barbara, L.A., Marin, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Escondido, Edmonds, and up to Canada to Victoria and Vancouver. You can find details on our website, devapramalmiten.com. Hope to see you there. Lots of love. Namaste.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. a philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth. Spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Welcome back, everyone. We are going to continue our conversation with Amber Berry, who is the founder and owner of Westside Yoga here in Atlanta, Georgia. And she has been telling us some great stories about how she got started, how yoga can heal the body and eliminate the need for painkillers. And she was explaining to us the different types of classes that she offers. So you were going to finish, I think, one of the classes you were explaining when we went to a commercial break, Amber, so we'll let you continue on that.
Right, and I guess the point I want to make is that I wanted to be innovative in our approach to yoga so that it could be more accessible, because I practiced yoga for many years where a lot of my friends would say that they were intimidated by yoga or it wasn't for them, they didn't like it, and so really the goal was to try to bring as many people into the community as possible by setting up classes that felt accessible to everyone. And so before the break, I told you about our restore class, which is more restorative poses, and then our flow class, which is half power yoga, half yin. And then our power yoga classes are energized, is just kind of a mid-level. It moves a little faster. We don't hold poses quite as longer, but it's definitely a workout. And burn and strong would be the next two. Like burn is like energized, but it has a little more core work and back strengtheners. And then strong introduces some more advanced postures and is definitely a much more challenging experience. But the idea is that if you come to a strong and you really wanted it to be an energized, you can take breaks if you want, you know. And so I want people to come when it's convenient. I want them to keep their yoga mat in their car and just know that there's always a 6 o'clock class and you can just pop in at your convenience. Because I felt for years like I had to work around the yoga studio's schedule and the teachers at the studio. And so I wanted a studio where it didn't matter who was teaching. So all of our teachers talk to each other and we follow similar formats. They have some creativity in how they execute it, but pretty similar experiences. It doesn't matter who the teacher is. And the classes are at the same time every day. They're all 1 hour. And if you want to modify the class to better suit the mood that you're in, because even the most advanced practitioner sometimes needs to take child's rest in the middle of a practice because they didn't sleep the night before or they had a really hard day at work. And so I wanted to kind of break down the labeling. Like I just felt I want to get rid of labels and just be a yogi. You don't have to be a certain kind of yogi. Just be a yogi and show up and do your best. So I feel like what we've done is really innovative, and it's been really well received by our community. And we call it the Happy Place. Our branding is hashtag Happy Place because that's what this was for me. It showed me happiness in a way that I had never experienced it in my life when I first started practicing. And I just want to share that. I think everybody deserves that.
Well, and you have brought along your teachers extremely well. They express all of what you're describing. And I want to also share with the listeners what you have posted on the back wall in your main yoga space. It says, "There is no way to happiness. Happiness is the way." Love that.
That's right.
And, you know, so it just little things like that go a long way in the awakening of the mind and shifting us into a more peaceful space inside of ourselves. One of the things that I do want to mention, too, that I love about the classes is that you always end the practice with a quiet time. We always end in Shavasana, which for those who don't know what that means is you're literally just lying flat on your back and you're going into a meditative space for a short period of time, but it's how you really pull it all together in the end and bring yourself to a place of rest before closing and having, you know, your teachers always have beautiful words and quotes, and it's just a lovely spiritual practice. So while I know a lot of people get into yoga for the physical benefit, and that's where we started the show's conversation, it's really such a powerful spiritual practice. And so one of the things that you said in your comment before we went to a commercial break was about listening to God and hearing this voice that told you this is really your calling, this is what you really needed to do, and you heeded the calling and did it beautifully. But I do want to talk about that a little deeper, because that is one of the reasons why I chose to have this as a topic on the show, because what I teach is the art of empowerment and transformation. And I usually am in corporate America, I'm in these big workplaces, and I'm helping business leaders with behavior change so that they lead a more beautiful, peaceful, just safe spaces for their employees, because it is my fundamental belief that we spend more time in our quote-unquote jobs than we do anything else, including sleep. Unfortunately, that's a cultural issue. But because we do that, my passion is to make sure that those workplaces are enjoyable and that that creates a ripple effect into home and health, right? Because if you're a workaholic and your boss is abusing you and you have a terrible experience, or you're just working way too many hours, your health is going to take a hit and your home life is going to take a hit. And there's really no two ways around that. So I encourage everyone I work with as a starting point to getting their mind and their body and their spirit back into a place where they can make tremendous change, to try a yoga practice. And I was just astounded when I ran across some random headlines in the news about how yoga classes have been shut down in certain communities that felt it to be religiously threatening, if I can phrase it that way. So I thought it was beautiful that you brought God into this conversation, because there is a difference between religion, you know, something being religious and something being spiritual. Every human being has a human spirit. And when our minds take control and disempower us, our spirits become broken. And that's a huge issue. Yoga is something that transcends religion. But tell us a little bit about its origin and why it seems to be a threat to some people who are religious in maybe, perhaps, dare I say, disempowering ways, divisive ways. What is the connection that people are making between this as a spiritual practice and religion? Can you break that down for us?
It's a complicated conversation. I'll do my best. It's practices that were born from the Hindu traditions and the Buddhist traditions, which I actually just returned from Bali. I spent the month of February studying yoga in Bali, which was really, really wonderful and really just so interesting. I was just a sponge absorbing the culture, because it's a Hindu island, and they don't really separate their culture from their religion. Like, they're all so intertwined, which make it's just, they're beautiful, beautiful spirits. And I think because these traditions were born from religions that are very different from the religions that are widely practiced in America, Christianity, Judaism, that there's fear, and it comes from a lack of understanding and a lack of listening, quite frankly. I think that, and I can speak from experience, because when I went through my yoga teacher training, I practiced for 3 years before becoming a teacher, and then I taught for a year and a half without a certification, because there were no certifications when I became a yoga teacher. And so I just showed up and I said the things my teachers said, and did my best to imitate what I had learned. But then when I went through certification, the first night of my training program, there was an Indian. They brought an Indian, like a real live Indian with a headdress, and he saged us. And I was terrified. I almost dropped out. Like, I didn't know what it meant. And they were using all these Sanskrit words. And I am a Christian, and I was actually doing disciple Bible study at my church, which is a course where you read 80% of the Bible in 36 weeks, and very, very committed to my Christian faith. And I was really afraid. And I'm not a super fearful person. I'm actually pretty brave in most areas, but it really scared me. And so I totally understand why people are afraid of it. And I realized the reason I was afraid is because I had never done any research. I hadn't asked the questions. I just made assumptions about what was going on. And also, I had listened to a lot of people in my life who said that anything that wasn't Christianity was evil. And I don't believe that any longer. And it took me a lot of time and experience to see that we have to connect on a human level, you know, regardless of what our religious beliefs, we have a responsibility to connect on a human level and listen to people instead of shutting down something that could potentially be the best thing that ever happened to you. So I think because the words are unfamiliar, I think because the terminology is unfamiliar, I think because Hinduism has a lot of gods, which Christians are very afraid of. And the thing that's interesting about that, though, is they worship one God just like we do. And I had a lot of conversations about this when I was in Bali. They worship one God. They believe in one God, but they believe God in different incarnations, different aspects of God. And that's what they celebrate, is the different qualities of God. And so the conversation really isn't that different from Christianity in a lot of ways. If you listen to what they're saying, their practices and the way they worship is different. But I saw a lot of commonality in the Hindu people that I worked with when I was in Bali. And it's made me even more convicted that we have to find common ground. I think the world, there's a lot that's changed in the world, and it's become easier than ever to shut people out because they don't agree with you, or they don't believe the same things you believe. And I think yoga can be a connector, a way of trying to see each other more clearly. You know, the light in me sees and honors the light in you. We have to live that. If we ever want peace in our lives, in our hearts, in our world, we have to really look at people and try to see their light and recognize that it's the same light that we have in ourselves.
Yes. Yes. Beautifully, beautifully put. And thank you for explaining that so well. I grew up in the heartland, right? A small town in southern Indiana. It was predominantly, if not 100% Christian. And yet, I think maybe it was because my father was a Marine and my mother had gone to the city to get her college education. I'm not sure what the influences of my parents were that allowed for me to be far more open-minded than most people in that community. But I do remember having a sense of calling my whole life that I just craved diversity. I craved cultural diversity. And so it was always hard for me to understand how closed off certain religions or just cultures, you know, a religion community can create its own culture, obviously. And so the differing beliefs, they divide us. And so my philosophy, you know, when I'm going in the workplace, I know when someone hires me, I'm landing right in the middle of major conflict, or they probably wouldn't have called. And my right. first job is to do exactly what you're saying, is to look for the light. Where's the light? Because conflict is born out of division, and whether that's beliefs that divide us or just a lack of information. But you put it so beautifully, because everything comes down to a choice between love or fear. And I like to tell people, love is the light and fear is the dark, and that is a choice. So just raise your consciousness to where your mind is landing. Because we have a neural circuitry inside of us that if there is a truth threat in our lives, we will know that in our gut, because we have nearly as much neural activity there as we do in our mind, in our brain, but our brain has all of these other mechanisms that get in the way of what a true threat is. And so we often misperceive a true threat because of the feelings that fear can evoke. And
right, and that's,
you've just explained that so beautifully.
Thank you.
Go ahead, you were about to make a point, sir. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to piggyback on what you were saying, and that, like, that's what yoga does. Because what you're saying, like, to choose the light instead of the dark, intellectually, I totally agree with that. But I can think of several examples in my own life recently where it's been very hard to choose the light over the dark. And the thing that helps me to do that is my yoga practice. And mm-hmm. I understand now what I didn't understand before when I first got into yoga, that I understand now, is that the system of yoga provides a set of tools that help us to see the truth, to help us find clarity in our lives and to be more discerning. And that's the word that pops up a lot in the ancient yoga texts, is to be more discerning. And I just think that what the world needs now is yoga, because I think it's harder than ever to choose the light, even though we know intellectually and even in our hearts that we should do that. I think there are things that have made it easier to choose the dark, like social media. We have fewer face-to-face conversations. We have more online conversations, and it's easier to be mean online or not loving online than it is in person. And so I think the yoga practice can bring us back to center and help us choose decisions or make decisions founded in love rather than the darkness. But it takes time. I mean, that's the other thing about yoga, is it's slow medicine. It takes a while.
And we're going to continue this conversation when we come back.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone. We have Amber Berry with us from Westside Yoga. And Amber, you, when we went to a commercial break, you were starting to make a really good point I want to talk about, and that is that it takes time. And this is one of the things I love about what your teachers remind us of all the time in class. It's a practice. Yoga is a practice. So we may show up differently every day, but we're always going to get this powerful benefit from it.
Right. And I've actually fallen in love with the subtle differences every day. Like, I've gained such an appreciation for the differences, where I used to think it was a bad thing if one day I was feeling a little tired or not able to do everything I normally do. And now I love it. Like, I just appreciate it so much.
Yes. One of the things I have been working on since joining your studio is being gentle with myself. That is not something that came naturally to me ever. If you ask anyone who's ever known me at all, the reason why I got fibromyalgia at such an early age was I was a workaholic. I worked myself into the ground. I displaced my worth in all kinds of ways related to just working too hard, pushing my body too hard, pushing myself too hard. I don't know what I am always trying to prove to myself. I'm not competing with anyone else. I'm always competing with myself, and I don't really know how to explain that. But one of the things that I have slowly recognized this year more than any other year, it only took me 50 years to get here, and that is that I'm still, all of the work that I've done on myself, and there is a lot, and I still am working through being gentle with myself. And your studio and my yoga practice at your studio is exactly what's helped me to do that. And it's been born out of the practice itself and all of what you're saying, that you show up differently every day, and it's that self-acceptance. I didn't come to your studio with the intent to be more gentle with myself. I came to your studio, and through my yoga practice, I had the epiphany that that's what I was learning to do. And I so sorely needed to do it. And so it's been a really interesting journey since joining, because I had injured myself 4 times this year from working too hard in the gym. So what does that tell you about me and not listening to my body?
You're not alone. We see that a lot.
And so I come in and do yoga, and that's when I recognize, wait, stop. How did you get yourself here? Okay, let's start by just being gentle in this practice. And I literally now work out differently. I am approaching everything differently and all of that. And I've had multiple benefits from yoga over the years. Don't get me wrong. This isn't the only one. This is just the most recent and profound. So to your point, the benefits never end. It is always different. It is subtle, but incredibly powerful. And so, what else do you see?
Well, I think that when I first got into yoga, I was looking for immediate results. I was really miserable, and I wanted everything to change now. And I realized that life doesn't work that way. Because of my yoga practice, I was finally able to accept that life doesn't work that way. But if I'm really diligent and committed, and I can see what I want a year from now, 5 years from now, 20 years from now, that it's easier to stay on the path and make the moment-to-moment choices, the daily choices that will lead me to the life that I want to have for the rest of my life. It's not just about what I want today. It's about what I want for the rest of my life. And what I want is freedom. I mean, that's one of the words that's used a lot in the ancient yogic texts, is liberation or freedom. And yoga offers tools that make us feel free if we use them appropriately. And I think I was very bound in my body and my mind for many, many years. you know, I had quite a bit of challenges in my childhood. When I was in sixth grade, my mom was diagnosed with terminal cancer and my parents divorced. And there was just a lot of things that were unusual compared to like what was going on with my classmates. And I think that from all of those experiences, I felt, I didn't feel free. I felt like I was caught up in this roller coaster of things that were happening, and I didn't have any freedom in that. And so when I got into yoga, and then after the car crash, you know, I was bound in my body. I had so much scar tissue, and yoga made me feel free. And I think everybody wants to feel free. I think we all have things that bind us in our life, but with regular practice, we can break those binds and remember who we are. My teacher used to say yoga is about remembering ourselves. It's not really even anything I can teach you. I guide you. I can give you things to think about. I can give you things to question. But I really believe at the end of the day, you're the one doing the work. I'm here because I'm a little further ahead on the path. You know, it's like if you went hiking somewhere and you'd never been to this mountain before, you would want a guide that could, you know, show you all the shortcuts. And, you know, it's not that they're better than you. It's just they've walked the path before. And so that's how I see myself and our teachers at the studio. And I remind my teachers, like, that's your role. You're a guide, and you're helping them find themselves. It's already there. Everything you need is already there. You're just helping them reveal it.
Mm-hmm. Completely. Yeah. It's very difficult to describe why and how it's powerful and how it's so transformative. And I think that's why I'm always encouraging people just try it and stay with it, because it's almost as though, even though you'll feel certain things physically, and you'll feel, you know, your spirit lift, and you'll feel your mind settle down each time, it's over time that you can reflect and see the larger transformations that are occurring in your life. And I just can't say enough about it. You know, and it's funny because you just brought up another issue about freedom and liberation. And I think that that's what I've been embarking on as well, simultaneous to being more gentle with myself. I went through a situation with breast cancer myself back in 2011 and 12, and had lots and lots and lots of surgeries in a short period of time, and wasn't really able to do any physical exercise. And so I went through a really difficult period of accepting my body again. And I think that while I have done a lot of work on that, I've noticed that in the past year or two, I've started to really get back into a bad body image frame of mind. And I think it's because I've been busy. I'm a single mom. Even though I have a great relationship with my ex-husband, it's not contentious at all. We've worked through so many things. I have a very peaceful life, but I have an extraordinarily busy life, and I choose not to date. And I think that that's caused me to get a little bit inhibited accidentally. And having had a mastectomy doesn't help, right? Now I'm thinking I have intimacy issues, and now I'm doing a deeper dive into my rabbit hole here. But the liberation, I started with a story about self-acceptance and how I feel that growing inside of me with every time I get on my yoga mat. But I'm embarking on another whole leg of that journey right now. So,
yeah,
I just love that you've touched on that.
Pretty common.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty common. And we, you know, there's stages in our lives, and you know, the Vedas, one of the earliest texts about yoga, one of the main mantras is, it is what it is. And I think that yoga can help us, no matter what stage of life we are in, to accept that that's what's going on for us right now. Like, if you are having intimacy issues or body image issues, learning to watch that and separate yourself from it so you're not reacting to it all the time. Because if you're reacting to it all the time, I don't know about you, but me, like, if I feel like I've gained weight, I almost, like, start eating more, because I don't know, it can have the reverse effect if we start.
Yes.
I mean, that was my pattern. I struggled with my weight growing up too. That was another thing yoga helped me control my weight for the first time in my life. But I think learning to witness what's going on, and I try to explain it. I'm like, well, this is happening, and so it must be because of that. And that can be really dangerous because I think that can get us into some bad belief systems. But if you can learn mm-hmm. to be the witness, so like, okay, well, I'm 50 and I had a mastectomy and I'm feeling this about my body and I'm just aware of that, but I'm not going to be reactive. I'm going to respond and make choices that support what I want in the future because I don't like what's happening here. And so like, I'm going to respond and do some things that are going to help me feel the way I want to feel 6 months from now. And if you act from that and learn not to, because I think we shame ourselves a lot. You know, we have this story, we have these thoughts, and then we dig a deeper grave by repeating it over and over and over. We repeat the same things in our mind thousands of times a day. And so watching the story, you learn to kind of separate yourself and you realize it doesn't serve you. Like having that thought doesn't do anything to help you become more of what you want to be. It actually makes you feel more stuck.
Yes. And I teach this all the time, Amber. It's interesting to be on the receiving side of your advice. I just gave a workshop on resiliency. I talked all about being the witness, all about how to rewire your mind, how to adopt new beliefs that you can, you know, that can liberate you. And I teach it day in and day out. I've been teaching it for 17 years. And I have gone through an incredible journey myself with many highs and lows. That we could take a whole show talking about, which we won't. But the bottom line is we're always evolving. We're always discovering new loopholes in our, you know, belief systems. We're always discovering new challenges in our minds that can really truly threaten to inhibit or shut us down if we allow for it. And, you know, to your point, if we step outside and gracefully look in as opposed to allowing it to take us down, allowing ourselves to be hostages in our own minds and bodies. And I cannot encourage people enough to just try yoga because you don't have to fight it. You don't have to work so hard to overcome it when you practice yoga. There is something very mystical and magical about how it takes care of itself. And I don't know if I'm overstating that or not. I just know that that has been my experience. But I do think that you need to have intention, right?
Right. Yeah, and that's the very first teaching, the eight limbs of yoga. The first two limbs are the things you should do and the things you shouldn't do. But I think, you know, yoga is magical and mystical, but it's also scientific. And so there's a couple different ways of looking at it. But if you look at what's happening in your brain, yoga gives us tools for single point of concentration. And it's so funny to me because that's what they talked about in the Yoga Sutras, which was written long before we could study the brain. But they talk about the value of single point of concentration. And that's what's happening in a yoga class when you synchronize your breath with your movement and your gazing point, your drishti. Every single yoga pose has a specific gazing point where you're supposed to take your eyes. And if you take your eyes, if you're not looking around, but you're focusing your eyes, your brain will calm down. If you're using mudras, hand gestures, there's so many tools that offer single pointed concentration in the yoga practice. And that is why we feel liberated at the end of our practice, because our mind has been given a break. Like our mind never stops all day long. Even when you're sleeping, your brain is busy. And so yoga is a different state of consciousness where the brain, you can get more into that single point of concentration, and it changes the frequency of your brain waves and the chemical reactions, the hormonal balance in your body. And there's actually a lot of science behind it. We should have another conversation about the science behind it, but it's also magical and mystical too, you know, like it's got all of those.
It is. And I think that's, you know, we talk about the mind, body, spirit connection, right? It's the mind and body. I mean, that's all following the neural circuitry, right? It's mm-hmm. But the spirit provides that magical mysticism. When it all comes together, it's just indescribable and invaluable to the human experience. So I love that you have shared all this, and I hope that people listening, if they have not had a good yoga experience, will try it again. If they have not had a yoga experience at all, that they will try it for the first time. And then those who do it on a regular basis will be more vocal about getting others to do it as well. It would do us a world of good if more people engaged in it and really understood what it stands for and what it does for us and how it brings us together and helps us all to be healthier and happier and more whole. So before we wrap up the show, do you have any tips or tools or anything on a practical level for all of our listeners around the globe who cannot come to Westside Yoga to do their yoga practice? What would you say to them?
Yoga was designed to be a daily practice, and so I would encourage you to try to do at least 15 minutes of yoga postures and breathing every day, and it will build on itself. You will feel the desire to do a longer practice over time, and if you can make it a daily habit, it'll change your life.
Perfect. Thanks so much for joining us, Amber. We'll see everyone next week.